Hello, this is Atta Durakan with the Decatur Herald and Review for Tuesday, December 31st, 2024, the holiday edition. And we'll start today's reading on the front page, Jimmy Carter, 1924 to 2024, Meeting Carter, a Musical Moment, Mount Zion Singers Visited Plains, Georgia. This article's by Valerie Wells, Mount Zion. If you wanted to meet former President Jimmy Carter, who died on Sunday at the age of 100, you could, but you had to attend his Sunday school class first. Jan Williams, who had been his daughter, Amy Carter's fourth grade teacher, accompanied the Carters to the White House to serve as Amy's tutor after the president was elected in 1976. She remained close to the family and in charge of the Plains, Georgia Inn, where tourists who wanted to visit Carter's hometown usually stayed. She arranges for tourists to come in, and if you want a chance to meet and get a picture with them, you have to follow her rules, and you have to come to Sunday school at Maranatha Baptist Church in Plains. That was his stipulation, said Rich Hansen, who teaches history and choir at Mount Zion High School. Hansen sings with a barbershop quartet and leads barbershop groups at the high school. Another teacher, now retired, told him that if he wanted to meet a former president, visiting Plains was the easiest way to accomplish it. A year or two later, I was in that general vicinity, Hansen said. You don't have to make a reservation, you just wait in line. There's a lot of people that do this. After I got the chance to meet him the first time, I arranged a return visit with the gospel quartet. I called Jan and said, would you like music for your service sometimes? Plain holds an annual peanut festival since the town is largely supported by peanut farming, and Hansen thought it would be worth scheduling a visit for the girls' quartet and the mixed ensemble from Mount Zion High School. We did a little fundraising and sang for some groups and raised some money and went down there in September 2013, Hansen said. It was an awesome experience. The kids sang and walked up and down the street. Plains has 500 people normally, but during the festival they have thousands in. President Carter would do book signings, and there was a train to his boyhood home, and the girls sang for that. That Sunday morning, we got a chance to sing during the service. Logan Schmidt, now a music teacher at Jefferson Elementary School in Charleston, was part of that group in his senior year at Mount Zion High School. After the service, we were able to meet them up close, and I got to sing for them as lead soloist on Georgia, On My Mind, which was quite special, Schmidt said. The former president was kind and soft-spoken, Schmidt said. Former First Lady Rosalynn Carter was the more animated and talkative of the two. Mrs. Carter died November 19, 2023, at the age of 96. Hansen doesn't make a habit of talking about the event to his students, he said, but when the matter of Carter entering hospice care in February 2023 came up, he did tell his choir students about meeting him and how everyone made the visitors feel at home. They make everyone feel like family down there, he said. And some photos that go along here. I'll read the captions. A nice selection of medium-sized black and white photos. In the first one, Mount Zion High School teacher Rich Hansen left, met Jimmy and Rosalynn Carter during a visit to Plains, Georgia. And they're sitting outside what looks like a normal residence with some trimmed boxwood. And the president is seated on a stool. On the president's left, photos right, is First Lady Rosalynn Carter. She's wearing a white jacket and black pants and black shoes and sunglasses. President Carter is wearing just a suit jacket, collared shirt, dress pants, and dress shoes, and his hands are folded on his lap, and he has a nice smile. And Hansen is wearing, looks like, light-colored pants, dark shoes, dark jacket, tie, and shirt, and he is on the president's right, our left. Provided photo. And we see also former President Jimmy Carter left and former First Lady Rosalynn Carter right flank the members of the 2013-14 quartet and mixed ensemble from Mount Zion High School in Illinois during a visit in Plains, Georgia. The students from left are Caitlin Chisinau, Miranda Richards, Tawny Williams, Allie Scogan, Meredith Jones, Maddie Johnston, Madison Stoker, Logan Schmidt, Bryant Lane, and Brandon Lane. Also provided photo. And finally, former President Jimmy Carter welcomes visitors June 8, 2014 at Maranatha Baptist Church before teaching Sunday school in Plains, Georgia. And he's up at the front of the congregation. Then we can see two or three rows of pews full of people. And the president has both hands up, and he has a slight smile on his face, and just looks very at peace. John Bazemore, Associated Press, photo credit. On to the next article here. Carter to be laid to rest at his home. Chris Majerian and Bill Barrow, Associated Press. Washington, Jimmy Carter's memorial journey will end at his house in the tiny town of Plains, Georgia, where he grew up on a peanut farm. That is where his wife Rosalind was laid to rest last year in a burial plot they chose years ago. Carter, who went on to become a peanut farmer and won the presidency in the wake of the Watergate scandal and Vietnam War, died Sunday. He was 100 years old. After enduring a humbling defeat after one tumultuous term, Carter redefined life after the White House as a global humanitarian. Our founder, former U.S. President Jimmy Carter, passed away this afternoon in Plains, Georgia, the Carter Center said on the social media platform X on Sunday. It added in a statement that he died peacefully, surrounded by his family. Before Carter reaches his humble final destination, there will be an interstate choreography of grief, ceremony, and logistics that is characteristic of state funerals. Ever since the nation's founding, America has bid farewell to former presidents with an intricate series of events weaving together long-standing traditions and personal touches. Funerals often are planned by the presidents themselves, who usually have years after leaving the White House to ponder how they want to be memorialized. They are very much involved in the planning process, and the decisions that they make tell us a lot about who they are, how they see the presidency, and how they want to be remembered by the American people, said Matthew Costello, senior historian from the White House Historical Association, who co-wrote a book called Mourning the Presidents, Loss and Legacy in American Culture. Carter had more time to plan than most. He lived for 43 years after his presidency ended, and the longest post-presidency in U.S. history. Many details of his funeral remain under wraps at the discretion of the family and military units that are responsible for carrying out the plans. Most presidents lie in state in the U.S. Capitol, and there is usually a service at Washington National Cathedral. President Joe Biden let slip last year that Carter had asked him to give a eulogy. Biden said Sunday his team is working with Carter's family and others to see to it that he is remembered appropriately here in the United States and around the world. Carter's son Chip is his main point of contact, though Biden said he spoke with all the Carter children. He described a process underway that will take a little time but will result in a major service in Washington, D.C. for Carter, which Biden scheduled for January 9th. As reaction poured in from around the world, Biden mourned Carter's death, saying the world lost an extraordinary leader, statesman, and humanitarian, and he lost a dear friend. Biden cited Carter's compassion and moral clarity, his work to eradicate disease, forge peace, advance civil and human rights, promote free and fair elections, house the homeless, and advocacy for the disadvantaged as an example for others. To all of the young people in this nation, and for anyone in search of what it means to live a life of purpose and meaning, the good life, study Jimmy Carter, a man of principle, faith, and humanity, Biden said in a statement. He showed that we are a great nation because we are a good people, decent and honorable, courageous and compassionate, humble and strong. Businessman, Navy officer, evangelist, politician, negotiator, author, woodworker, citizen of the world, Carter forged a path that still challenges political assumptions and stands out among the 45 men who reached the nation's highest office. The 39th president leveraged his ambition with a keen intellect, deep religious faith, and prodigious work ethic, conducting diplomatic missions into his 80s and building houses for the poor well into his 90s. My faith demands, this is not optional, my faith demands that I do whatever I can, wherever I am, whenever I can, for as long as I can, with whatever I have to try to make a difference, Carter once said. A moderate Democrat, Carter entered the 1976 presidential race as a little-known Georgia governor with a broad smile. Outspoken Baptist mores and technocratic plans reflecting his education as an engineer, his no-frills campaign depended on public financing, and his promise not to deceive the American people resonated after Richard Nixon's disgrace and U.S. defeat in Southeast Asia. If I ever lie to you, if I ever make a misleading statement, don't vote for me. I would not deserve to be your president, Carter repeated before narrowly beating Republican incumbent Gerald Ford, who lost popularity after pardoning Nixon. Carter governed amid Cold War pressures, turbulent oil markets, and social upheaval over racism, women's rights, and America's global role. His most acclaimed achievement in office was a Mideast peace deal that he brokered by keeping Egyptian President Anwar Sadat and Israeli Prime Minister Menachem Begin at the bargaining table for over 13 days in 1978. That Camp David experience inspired the post-presidential center where Carter would establish much of his legacy. Yet Carter's electoral coalition splintered under double-digit inflation, gasoline lines, and the 444-day hostage crisis in Iran. His bleakest hour came when 8 Americans died in a failed hostage rescue in April 1980, helping to ensure his landslide defeat to Republican Ronald Reagan. Carter acknowledged in his 2020 White House diary that he could be micromanaging and excessively autocratic, complicating dealings with Congress and the federal bureaucracy. He also turned a cold shoulder to Washington news media and lobbyists, not fully appreciating their influence on his political fortunes. It didn't take us long to realize that the underestimation existed, but by that time, we were not able to repair the mistake, Carter told historians in 1982, suggesting that he held an inherent incompatibility with Washington insiders. Carter insisted his overall approach was sound and that he achieved his primary objectives to protect our nation's security and interests peacefully and enhance human rights here and abroad, even if he fell spectacularly short of a second term. Ignominious defeat, though, allowed for renewal. The Carters founded the Carter Center in 1982 as a first-of-its-kind base of operations, asserting themselves as international peacemakers and champions of democracy, public health, and human rights. I was not interested in just building a museum or storing my White House records and memorabilia, Carter wrote in a memoir published after his 90th birthday. I wanted a place where we could work. That work included easing nuclear tensions in North and South Korea, helping to avert a U.S. invasion of Haiti, and negotiating ceasefires in Bosnia and Sudan. By 2022, the Carter Center declared at least 113 elections in Latin America, Asia, and Africa to be free or fraudulent. Recently, the center began monitoring U.S. elections as well. Carter's stubborn self-assuredness and even self-righteousness proved effective once he was unencumbered by the Washington order, sometimes to the point of frustrating his successors. He went where others are not treading, he said, to places like Ethiopia, Liberia, and North Korea, where he secured the release of an American who had wandered across the border in 2010. Small black and white photo here, former President Jimmy Carter talks to the media as they pause from building a Habitat for Humanity house in Violet, Louisiana. Monday, May 21st, 2007, they were working on the 1,000th Habitat for Humanity house in the Gulf Coast region since Hurricanes Katrina and Rita. And the former president showed in a plaid work shirt, a bandana around his neck, lanyard, and a Habitat for Humanity hard hat. And there are several news organization microphones in front of him, and in back there are people helping with the build, and we can see the walls framed up, still open to the sky, no roof or beams up. And the photo credit goes to Alex Brandon, Associated Press. Well, as is typical, seems like every January 1st, there's new laws. So we're on to the government for Illinois. New year, new laws. Nearly 300 new Illinois laws take effect in 2025. Ben Salzinski, Capital News, Illinois, Springfield. Time to study up, Illinois. When the clock hits midnight on New Year's Day, 293 state laws will take effect. Those include some of the defining bills of the 2024 legislative session and others that will change how people get IDs, evaluate job postings, and even cancel gym memberships. In addition to the laws taking effect January 1st, the state's minimum wage will rise to $15 to complete a ramp-up initiated during Governor J.B. Pritzker's first month in office in 2019. Digital driver's licenses, the Secretary of State, can begin creating a process to issue digital driver's licenses and state IDs beginning in the new year after Pritzker signed House Bill 4592. Residents will still be required to receive a physical ID, and agencies or private entities will not be required to accept digital IDs in place of physical IDs. Providing a phone to police to show a digital ID also doesn't give police consent to search a person's cell phone. Salary transparency. Employers with 15 or more employees must include information about benefits and the salary range on job postings according to House Bill 3129. The law will also apply to businesses hiring for remote working positions in Illinois. When employers aren't transparent about pay, gender, and racial, wage gaps widen, costing women and people of color valuable compensation, Lieutenant Governor Juliana Stratton said in a news release. Illinois' new pay transparency law is a resounding win for the working people who call our state home. Junk health insurance, short-term limited-duration health insurance plans will be illegal in Illinois beginning January 1st. The plans, often called junk insurance by critics, do not meet the minimum standards of the Federal Affordable Care Act. The ban outlined in House Bill 2499 was part of Pritzker's health insurance overhaul that lawmakers passed in the spring. It was aimed at reducing barriers to care for patients and making health care more affordable by expanding coverage requirements for insurance companies. Short-term insurance plans are typically for people who have a lapse in health insurance coverage, such as when they lose or change jobs, but they are different from COBRA benefits, which most employers are required to offer under federal law. Supporters of the bill argued the plans are deceptive and stick consumers with huge out-of-pocket costs, but others said the plans provide consumers with an affordable option to fill in gap in coverage. Caregiver discrimination. House Bill 2161 adds family responsibilities to the list of categories protected from discrimination and retaliation in the workplace. The new law prevents employers from taking adverse action against employees because of their responsibilities as a caregiver for a family member, which could cause them to miss work. Bill sponsor Representative Will Guzzardi, Democrat, Chicago, told a House committee in April that pregnant women are a good example of who the bill is designed to help. He said pregnant women shouldn't be passed up for a promotion or face other consequences at work in anticipation that they will be taking time off to care for their baby. Guzzardi stressed the bill does not protect employees who fail to meet minimum job performance requirements. AI regulations. New laws governing artificial intelligence take effect January 1st. It will be illegal to generate child pornography using AI, according to House Bill 4623. Supporters of the bill, including the Illinois Attorney General's office, said it is becoming more difficult to distinguish between real and AI-generated images. They said updating Illinois' child pornography laws was a necessary step to allow law enforcement to identify and prosecute child pornography cases. House Bill 4875 also adds new protections to prohibit AI to recreate a person's voice, image, or likeness for commercial purposes without the person's consent. Recording artists can seek damages for violating the law. Politics and religion at work. Employees can't be required to sit through work meetings discussing religion or politics starting January 1st. Senate Bill 3649, an initiative of the Illinois AFL-CIO, creates a new protection for employees who skip out on such meetings and prevents employers from retaliating against them. The law does not prohibit discussing religion or politics at work, but employees are not required to participate in the discussions if such activities are not part of their job. The law excludes nonprofit and advocacy groups where politics or religion may be part of the job. Coming later in 2025, Pritzker's signature health reform package goes into effect January 1st, but most provisions don't have to be implemented until the beginning of 2026. House Bill 5395 bans step therapy, which requires patients to try and fail treatments preferred by insurance companies before they can receive the treatment recommended by their doctor. It also bans insurance companies from requiring prior authorization for emergency inpatient mental health treatment, requires insurers to keep up-to-date lists of the in-network providers, and expands the power of the Illinois Department of Insurance to regulate premium rates. Many hotels in Illinois will no longer be allowed to provide customers with single-use plastic soap and shampoo beginning July 1st under Senate Bill 2960. The move is designed to cut down on waste from single-use products. The Illinois Hotel and Lodging Association supported the change. Hotels with fewer than 50 rooms have until 2026 to make the change. Other new laws, NIL money. Student athletes at NCAA universities can earn name, image, and likeness money directly from their universities. House Bill 307 was an initiative of the University of Illinois. Hearing aids. Insurance providers must cover medically prescribed hearing aids for all people under House Bill 2443. Coverage was previously only required for those under 18. Gym memberships. House Bill 4911 requires gyms and fitness centers to accept multiple ways for people to cancel their membership. Physical fitness locations also must now allow customers to cancel their membership by email or online. Customers will also be allowed to submit written notice for canceling their membership by mail. Subscription renewals. Businesses that offer a free trial or promotional period for their product or service must notify customers at least 3 days before the subscription automatically renews at a paid rate under Senate Bill 2764. The law only applies to subscriptions longer than 15 days. Crime victim DNA. DNA evidence collected from a person who is the victim of a crime to aid a criminal investigation cannot be entered into a DNA database, according to House Bill 1168. We now move on to A3, local and nation. Woman accused of voting twice. Tony Reed Decatur has this article. A Decatur woman is facing a charge of voting more than once in the November general election, police have confirmed. Macon County jail records show 70-year-old Brenda L. Wilcott was arrested by the Macon County Sheriff's Office December 27th. She was booked into the jail, photographed, and then released in a process that took 12 minutes and given a notice to appear in Macon County Circuit Court. Macon County Sheriff Jim Root told the Herald and Review on Sunday that a few complaints accusing people of voting more than once show up after almost every election once the results have been analyzed and ratified. County Clerk Josh Tanner's office gets a report back from the state, and he notifies the state attorney's office of a circumstance where it appears a person has voted twice, Root explained. They turn that over to the sheriff's office, and we do an investigation, and then we report back to the state's attorney's office. Then they make the decision on whether or not to charge and whether or not there is probable cause to support an arrest. And this time, the state's attorney looked up the file and told us to go ahead and make an arrest. They will prosecute the case. Root said the November election had also thrown up another case of apparent double voting, but this turned out to be a clerical error. There had been no second vote cast, and the case was dropped. I don't know how many of these cases happen in other counties or if they actually investigate them, Root added, but our county is very adamant that we are not going to tolerate voting twice. There was another case of double voting brought before Macon County Circuit Court after the Illinois primary election of 2022, when a Decatur man had faced two charges. The issue had been headed for a jury trial but was resolved in August 2023 when the charges were dismissed with the threat they could be refiled. The man has agreed to enter a diversion program where the charges would finally disappear as long as he stayed out of further trouble. Then Macon County State's Attorney Scott Reuter said that man had agreed to do certain things to correct his behavior and stay on the straight and narrow for 6 months, and then he would emerge with a clean record. The man, who worked long hours as a river boatman, said he just made a balloting mistake due to forgetfulness. Poll profits blamed in CEO's death. Lindley Sanders, Tom Murphy, and Amelia Thompson DeVoe, Associated Press, Washington. Most Americans believe health insurance profits and coverage denials share responsibility for the killing of UnitedHealthcare CEO, although not as much as the person who pulled the trigger, according to a new poll. In the survey from NORC at the University of Chicago, about 8 in 10 U.S. adults said the person who committed the killing has a great deal or a moderate amount of responsibility for the December 4th shooting of Brian Thompson. Despite that, some have cast Luigi Mangione, the 26-year-old suspect charged with Thompson's murder, as a heroic figure. Unbelievable. In the aftermath of his arrest, which gave rise to an outpouring of grievances about insurance companies, police say the words delay, deny, and depose were scrawled on the ammunition investigators found at the scene, echoing a phrase commonly used to describe insurer tactics to avoid paying claims. UnitedHealthcare has said Mangione was not a client. About 7 in 10 adults say that denials for healthcare coverage by insurance companies or the profits made by health insurance companies also bear at least a moderate amount of responsibility for Thompson's death. Younger Americans are particularly likely to see the murder as a result of a confluence of forces rather than just one person's action. Americans see a wide range of factors contributing to UHC CEO's killing. The poll finds that the story of the slaying is being followed widely. About 7 in 10 say they had heard or read a lot or some about Thompson's death. Multiple factors were seen as responsible. About half in the poll believe that at least a moderate amount of blame is rooted in wealth or income inequality, although they did not think other factors like political division in the U.S. held the same level of responsibility. Patients and doctors often complain about coverage denials and other complications interfering with care, especially for serious illnesses like cancer and amyotrophic lateral sclerosis or ALS. Insurance industry critics frequently point to company profits and questioning whether the interests of patients are their top focus. UnitedHealthcare made more than $16 billion in profit last year before interest and taxes on $281 billion in revenue. Insurers frequently note that most of the revenue they bring in goes back out the door to pay for care. UnitedHealthcare said this month that it pays about 90% of medical claims when they are submitted. The insurer has not provided details about how many claims that involves. Americans under 30 are especially likely to think a mix of factors is to blame for Thompson's death. They say that insurance company denials and profits are about as responsible as Thompson's killer for his death. And with that interesting piece of information, we come to the end of the first half hour of the Decatur Herald and Review for Tuesday, December 31st, 2024. We'll take a short break and return with the second half hour.